Churches and Schools for the Working Classes. An address by the Reverend Dr. Chalmers on the practicability of providing moral and religious education for the working population of large towns, as illustrated by the success which has attended the operations carried on in the Westport of Edinburgh, delivered the 27th of December, 1845. Some who are here present may recollect that in the summer of 1844, I delivered several addresses, amounting, I believe, to six in number, on the subject of what I call the territorial system, particularly as applied to great towns. I believe that a considerable impression was then made in favor of that system, both for the purpose of educating and Christianizing the people, insomuch that I was advised by several very influential people to set a-going subscriptions immediately for a certain number of local churches and schools. It required a good deal of deliberation before one could decide on such a proposal, and on consulting my friend, the late lamented Dr. Abercrombie, I was influenced by his cautious and judicious advice to postpone anything like an appeal to the public in favor of the territorial system until I had given some proofs of the advantage of it. We have had it in operation now for a little more than a year in the Westport, and I am sure that you will allow that if we have succeeded there, it may be considered as an experimentum crucis. We commenced our operations in the Westport in November 1844. At least, we did not fairly commence operations till then, so that we have been little more than 12 months engaged in the experiment. I feel that it would be a very unwieldy task were I to enter upon a full description of the territorial system and an explanation of all the principles upon which I conceive its efficacy hinges. The truth is that it is a subject which I think could not be condensed within a narrower compass than at least six lectures. I therefore almost shrink from the idea of coming forth with anything so unwieldy, but I hope that a plain, unvarnished description of what we have done in the Westport upon that system will help to convey to you a pretty clear understanding of what the system really is. Well then, by the territorial system, I mean the local, in opposition to the merely congregational system. Instead of a church filled from all distances and from all points of the compass, I assume a locality to be placed under the management of a certain number of philanthropic men who wish well to the temporal and eternal interests of their fellow creatures. One great object is to see that they have assigned to them not a larger field than they are able to overtake. I infinitely prefer the thoroughly pervading of a small district to spreading and superficializing one's operations over a large one. In fact, I prefer what may be called the thick set to the broadcast husbandry. On the same principle, upon which I would like to make a locality no larger than is commensurate with the body of Christian philanthropists whom I engage, I would like that each of those should be attached to a sub-district sufficiently small for him to overtake, and to get himself thoroughly acquainted with all the families in it, by itinerating among them through the week, and taking a deep interest in all that concerns their temporal and spiritual welfare. He will thus get thoroughly acquainted with them. And if he is actuated by a principle of Christian benevolence, he will very soon find that the natural sense and intelligence of the humble people will not fail to interpret aright the motives by which he is actuated. For, by a law of our nature, if we have love in our heart, no human being can fail to show the love of gratitude back again. Now, therefore, say that this body of philanthropists amount to 20 in number, and say that they undertook the care of a population of 2,000 or 400 families. This would be 20 families to each philanthropist, or each agent, as I am apt to call them. Now, there is no need of any ingenious process of explanation here. There is nothing required but good, plain, hard work. The agency, body, or band of men are associated with a locality. Each of these men is attached to his little district or home walk, over which he can expatiate, discharging all the offices of Christian kindness and Christian charity, and acting on the principles of doing all the good he can to these families. Accordingly, this principle takes various directions, such as moral and religious converse, converse on the state of the education of their families, and everything, in fact, which can tend to their advantage, whether it relates to their temporal or spiritual concerns. Prayer meetings he may have, and he may circulate tracts and do various other things of a like nature. Let me observe that our agency is made up both of ladies and gentlemen, and I cannot adequately express my strong sense of the humanizing influence which the employment of females is fitted to exercise in the way of elevating and refining even the rudest of our outcast population. Now, you will observe that the first principle of this territorial system is the giving everyone a sufficiently small sphere which he can thoroughly fill up and overlook. The second is what I call the aggressive principle. Build a church without any respect to the territorial principle, and the people who have any value and love for religion will come and fill it, but those who have no value for religion will not come. It was a prodigious oversight to grant a million of money merely to build churches in London and other great towns in England. The legislature thought that nothing was necessary but to build churches and that the people would flow into them. Now, I must say that there is no disposition of this kind on the part of the general population. The movement won't begin with our alienated population who have fallen away from the habits and decencies of a Christian land. But in order to bring them to Christianity, the movement must begin somewhere. This movement will not be on the side of the people themselves. It must be on the side of those who have themselves felt the power of Christianity and wish to communicate its benefits to others. The movement will not be on the side of those whom they wish to become the recipients of Christianity. It must be on the side of those who come forward to be the dispensers of Christianity to them. The dispensers of Christianity, then, are called to act upon what I call the aggressive principle. I hope there is nothing too scholastic in that term, and it is exceedingly convenient to express what I am enforcing and avoids circumlocution in the way of explaining what I mean. The aggressive principle, then, is that in virtue of which I do not hold myself acquitted of the Christian duty which I owe to my fellow creatures, merely by raising an apparatus of churches and schools and saying, "Come in, if you will, here, and I am at my post if you choose to come to me, and if you won't come to your post, you are yourselves to blame." This is very much what is done for the population in general. But unless you bring the aggressive principle to bear upon them, you need not expect them to come to you. There is something more necessary than a stationary apparatus. You must go forth to the people. The agent, in short, must act as a Christian missionary, his business being to go forth to the people during the week as well as employ Sabbath services. Let us consider that 20 districts have been assigned to as many agents, and that it is their business also to bring all the powers of moral suasion to bear on the people residing in these localities in order to induce them to come to the Sabbath services, and for the purpose of persuading them to send their children to the schools. These are the two great central points of our system, and accordingly, we constituted both of these in the Westport. The place in which we meet affords but humble and not very comfortable accommodation. It is an old storeroom in a tanyard, with a very obscure access, entering by a close which is so low that one is obliged to stoop to make his way through it. And, altogether, the accommodation is certainly of a very repulsive character, and this storehouse answers both for a school during the week and also for the services on the Sundays. You are to understand, therefore, that the first principle in my scheme is that you must take a slice of territory small enough for a single man to overtake, and that the second principle is that you must go forth to the population inhabiting this territory, and that you must not expect them to come to you for the good things of which you are the dispenser. If you are the dispenser of physical good things, such as bread, butcher meat, and other things of the same nature, there would be no necessity for your setting up the aggressive principle. The attractive principle would be sufficient to ensure a demand for them. But I say that you are the dispenser of that which has no charm for man, who is morally and spiritually dead, and therefore you must go forth to him with the benefits of which you are the dispenser. And this is missionary work at a short distance. Don't think that it is necessary that you should travel thousands of miles or that you have immense oceans to traverse before you can engage in a missionary work. There are wretched creatures in many parts of this town who are at as great a moral distance from the gospel and from all its lessons as if they had been born and lived all their days in the wilds of Tartary. Now, this is what I call a home mission, which essentially requires all which constitutes the virtue of self-denial in the missionary work. I dare say these two principles are so very obvious as to recommend themselves at once to your adoption. But there is another point on which I do not meet with so full a sympathy, but with the truth of which I am strongly impressed, namely, that I don't think you will achieve any permanent good for the population unless you enlist them as fellow workers in, or at least as fellow contributors to, the cause. I think that a great and radical error in the management of our population has just proceeded from the idea that they are utterly helpless and unable to do anything for themselves. I believe that if you proceed rightly, it will be found that they are able to do a great deal for themselves, and that unless you enlist their cooperation, you will never achieve anything like a permanent good for them. I know that there is a difference of opinion on this point, and I have to encounter a good deal of sentimentality on the subject. There has been a little internal controversy among ourselves, but I stand up most inflexibly on the subject of fees and think these persons ought to pay fees for the education of their children. Acting accordingly on the principle, we exact 2 pence a week from the people in the Westport for the education of their children. And I think I have pretty well convinced the people there that it is a good thing and a right thing to have fees. I think that by the principle of doing all the good for them, you do a partial and ephemeral good. I might enlist, perhaps, a sufficiently effective body of auxiliaries to give me annual subscriptions to pay a salary for the schoolmaster, as also to defray the whole expense of the architectural apparatus, including both the church and school. I might be able, I say, to do all that, and yet I would not be able to ensure their continuance. No doubt the church and the schools would stand for a century, but I would not be able to ensure their continuance for years, not having the means to defray the whole maintenance of the schoolmaster and of the minister, or the current annual expenses of the concern. Accordingly, I am most anxious to enlist the people in the cause, that they may take a share in the matter, and calling upon them to assist by their weekly payments, is the very means calculated to effect that end, and by so doing, you effect a permanent good on the part of the population. My own experience, I think, enables me to vindicate the principle I am now laying down. When I was in Glasgow, I succeeded in getting subscriptions from many of my wealthy friends there, which enabled me to build 4 schools and schoolhouses for the accommodation of the masters. And I believe I got as much more as enabled me to endow one of the schools, the sum I received for this purpose amounting to £500, which sum the town council agreed to take at 5%, and to endow the school in all time coming, and I believe that £25 is the sum now paid. The question of fees was started at that time, and it was said that the poor people would not be able to pay fees. I, however, said that if they did not admit of fees, it would be quite ephemeral all the good they were now doing for them. I said, allow fees, and you teach the people that education is worthy of its price, and inure them to the habit of paying that price, and believe me that the interest which they take in education will be of a far more permanent and enduring character than you could look for in after times from the contributions of the wealthy. In a few years, you and I will be mouldering in our coffins, and we have no security that we will be succeeded by another body of Christian philanthropists who will enable the poor to get their education gratis. It was agreed that fees should be exacted, and we were gratified to find that the schools were filled to an overflow, attended by no less than 600 scholars, paying 2 pence a week, which amounted to £240 a year. I got these 4 schools and the schoolhouses erected for £2,000, and I also got £500 for an endowment to one of the schools. We could not have got up the fabrics without the assistance of the wealthier classes, and that is not the assistance I expect from the general population. What I expect from the wealthier classes is the capital sum that will enable us to build schools and schoolhouses, and if they like to give us more so as to enable us to endow them, so much the better. But, as I have said, all that I got in Glasgow for this purpose was £2,500, and that at 4% will just amount to £100 a year. The children paid 2 pence a week, a sum which sounds very insignificant, but as there were 600 scholars at the school, this 2 pence a week gave £240 a year. That is to say, the general population gave twice more for education than the higher classes had done. Now, what I want to establish is a system of education founded on the basis of the popular habit, the habit of inuring the population to pay for the education of their children, and which would have the effect of transmitting the interest in education from father to son, and so make it a fixture, just as we made it a fixture in the Gallowgate of Glasgow. I, in short, want to make a fixture of education in the same way in the Westport. I want the higher classes to get up the outward apparatus, but for the current annual expenses connected with the church and school, I want to train up the families in the locality in the sentiment that education is worthy of its price, and to inure them to the paying of that price. Now, I will just give you another instance of what I am enforcing by adverting to the Lancasterian schools. There was enthusiasm, and a most beneficial enthusiasm it was, among the higher classes on the side of Lancasterian education 25 years ago, and very handsome subscriptions were obtained, which enabled us to build a large fabric, which, you are aware, is at present under the superintendence of Mr. Dunn. And in a conversation I had 10 days ago with Mr. Dunn, the intelligent master of that seminary, he told me that just now it was attended by 700 scholars. Now, suppose we had succumbed to the whining sentimentality that the people were too poor to pay, and that they could do nothing to help themselves, the school would have dwindled down to nothing. At this school, 2 pence a week is paid by nearly all the scholars, and it is now attended by 700 scholars. Now, this 2 pence a week amounts to 8 shillings a year, and 700 scholars at 2 pence a week realizes £280 a year. Very well. While the higher classes raised the fabric, the continuance of the school was ensured by the weekly payments of the general population. And it was much better to see an interest created in behalf of education among the families around that fabric, which interest exists to the extent of no less than £280 a year, than if the continuance of the school hinged on the support it should receive from the wealthier classes. The people are not the worse of being told of what we expect from them, and it is but right that they should be told to a certain extent of their own importance. Now, in regard to our evening classes in the Westport, we taught these during the last winter at 1.5 pence a week. Scholars have come forward, and they gladly pay their 1.5 pence a week. We had salaried schoolmasters, and the amount of salary they receive from us amounts to £12, and the fees from the school amount to £14. And those attending were well pleased to understand that they were the main contributors to the evening school that was going on. Editorial note. The Reverend Doctor here referred to the schools, which had been established in connection with Heriot's Hospital, and said that while he looked upon the movement with the most benignant complacency, and thought that it was a far better direction of their funds than was formerly given to them, though perhaps he might shoot a little ahead of them as regarded, in his view, the optimism, yet he must say that their system was not founded on the aggressive principle, and was not, therefore, fitted thoroughly to pervade the population. In as far as the Westport was concerned, the schools of Heriot's Hospital did not bear upon the population there, for it is without the royalty. The Reverend Doctor then proceeded. Well, then, such being the state of matters, let me report our progress. Let me tell you what has been the effect of all this moral suasion being brought to bear upon the children in the Westport during the past 12 months. Insofar as the school was concerned, we began with between 50 and 60 scholars. We lingered for a considerable while under 100. There was a great alarm, I think unnecessary alarm, manifested when the normal school was opened, the education there being, I understand, gratuitous. Now, to show you the effect of the aggressive principle, I am happy to say that our numbers, so far from diminishing, have greatly increased since the erection of the normal school. I have the pleasure of announcing the gratifying fact that our day school is now attended by no fewer than 250 scholars, and those chiefly local. The Westport has the preference. At our evening school last winter, people from the grass market came offering their 1.5 pence a week, but we refused to take them in because they did not belong to the Westport. Some people said that this was a very ungenerous thing to the grass market, but we said, no, let them just get another band of philanthropists to do for the grass market what we are doing for the Westport. I don't want to superficialize. I want to go to the very bottom of the pool in the Westport, and to fish up the very lowest there, and you can go and do the same in other localities. This system of general schooling and churching is a system which, I admit, has conferred the highest educational and spiritual benefits on one or two of the uppermost strata of society. But in consequence of the lower having been overlooked and neglected, a smoldering fire is now gathering at the bottom of the Commonwealth, which, if not met and counteracted, will explode and upheave all the institutions of the country. Go, therefore, to the grass market, we say, and get down to the bottom of the pool there. Go to the very humblest of society, and let me see the Christian Church performing its functions and letting down its services to the veriest beggars and blackguards of the community. I repeat, then, that we have now nearly 300 scholars in the Westport, the vast majority of whom are fee payers. I don't know where the founders of the Church of Scotland got their profound wisdom, I would call it, in economics, but the fathers of the Scottish Reformation were not only devoutly evangelical in the light of spiritual men, but they were men of the most profound wisdom in a worldly sense, men skilled in a knowledge of human nature worthy of our highest admiration. There are three systems of schooling. There is the first gratuitous or wholly endowed system, which is in general a very lax and careless system. The second is the converse of this, being wholly unendowed, and which I think very bad, too, because it forces the people to pay too high fees. It does not meet the people halfway. The other system is the parochial or medium system, established by the fathers of the Reformation, where the two parties meet each other halfway. The heritors of the parish pay a small salary to the schoolmaster and erect the schoolhouse, in virtue of which the schoolmaster is enabled not merely to live, but to live comfortably and to furnish education to the people at moderate fees. This system, as I have said, meets the people halfway. And by thus obtruding, so to speak, a school in every district of the country, it affords a standing intimation to the people of their duty in regard to education. By this system, too, you get the people to pay moderate fees and thus bind them effectually to the cause of education, and perpetuate and diffuse it far more universally than it would otherwise be. I would say that the universality of Scottish education is to be ascribed to this medium system instituted by the fathers of the Scottish Reformation. And I would say that the partial, broken, and imperfect system of education in England, where all attempts have failed to make education so universal as here, is owing to the fact that the two systems have been shared between the wholly endowed and the wholly unendowed. Well, I would just say that the experiment, so far as the schools are concerned, has been completely successful. I ought to state that we have a girls' school as well as a boys' school, and that the girls are taught not only sewing and knitting, but likewise washing, which I regard as a most useful branch of education. And I must say that we have been much obliged to a lady who lately gave us the most opportune present of 100 weight of soap. We have upwards of 100 girls at this school, and I have no recollection of anything so sudden, so much per saltum, as the transition in the aspect of these girls from the time of their first raggedness, as they were found running about the streets in that destitute locality, to the personal cleanliness and respectability which they now exhibit. Their appearance indeed is altogether delightful. I am sure I may appeal to the ladies who are in the habit of visiting the school if there be not an immense improvement in the aspect and manners of the girls. Now, just consider the prodigious refining and elevating cast which this is calculated to give to their whole character. You have heard of baths, too, for the working classes. Well, we also have our district baths. The boys, I may state, have not made so large an advance as the girls in point of appearance, but altogether the schools present a most attractive and delightful spectacle. I have been told that a number of the plebeian schools in our city have been abandoned by female visitors in virtue of want of personal cleanliness. By the use of baths, this want is counteracted. The truth is that there is nothing like going thoroughly to work. We even take cognizance of haircutting, as far as the boys are concerned. We have made a bargain. I don't know that it is a very cheap one, but we got a hairdresser to clip the boys' heads at 18 pence a dozen, which is at the rate of 3 halfpence a head. I can just say this much, that I am sure that the ruder and rawer the material is, out of which finished goods are worked, the greater is the triumph of the manufacturing art. and in this point of view, I would consider it a most attractive and inviting circumstance when we recollect that these poor people have all the capacities of human spirits, that they have talents, that they have imperishable souls, that they are on a full level of equality with ourselves and all that is essential to man, and that we have nothing to do but to go and do them justice, and to give up the shameful neglect which we have indulged towards the lower classes for half a century, I would say for almost a whole century, and it is not to be told to what height of advancement, morally, intellectually, and economically, they are capable of being raised. I have much pleasure in saying that we have a singularly able and accomplished teacher, in so much that he is rather out of place in being the schoolmaster of a mere locality. But that is our advantage, and there never was a finer specimen of intellectual, moral, and religious training than in that school. There, the religious instruction and intellectual training is the best and most perfect I ever saw. The scholars are kept in a constant state of intellectual activity, which never fails to call forth the admiration of visitors. They come to see what ragged and barefooted creatures are capable of being worked up to, and they see the contrast that is exhibited between the humble habiliments in which they are arrayed and the undoubted talents which they display. Editorial note. The Reverend Doctor next proceeded to explain that a savings bank had also been instituted, chiefly for the girls, though it had also been extended to the boys, and was of great importance in teaching them habits of saving. He read a statement showing that from the 3rd of January to the 23rd of December, the number of depositors was 236, of whom 107 were boys and 129 girls, and that the total sum deposited was £15.04.1, out of which there had been returned in money £5.09.9, and in articles of clothing £5.01.35, leaving a balance of £4.13.5. A good deal had been expended on shoes and boys' clothing. The evening school is attended by farther advanced scholars, and the total sum deposited by them between the 5th of May and December 22nd was £4.11.4.5, of which there had been returned £3.09.5, leaving a balance of £1.11.6.75. Then, with respect to the Sabbath services, he estimated the forenoon attendance at between 60 and 70, and he was happy to say that it was steadily progressing. He estimated the afternoon attendance at about 150, and in the evening there was an overflowing attendance. Now, he begged the meeting to recollect that the place to which the people were thus brought out was uncomfortable and inconvenient, and that the air and exhalations from without were so bad as to blacken all the silver in a man's pocket, by the deposition of sulfurated hydrogen which took place, arising from the escape of certain gases. "The place is so uncomfortable," continued the Reverend Doctor, "that we want to get out of it as soon as possible. For this purpose I must throw myself upon the liberality of the Christian public. I have not been very troublesome in this way hitherto. To be sure, I have been a great wholesale beggar in my time. I headed the enterprise of church extension by which 200 new churches were erected at an expense of £800,000, but I am not sure that I ever headed an enterprise before for a special or local object. But if this local object is fulfilled, if I succeed in this, and if it is followed up, as it might be, by other imitations of it, I shall be the head of a far more important enterprise than I have ever been engaged in throughout the whole course of my life. I have been speaking of the gifts of our schoolmaster. I will say nothing of the gifts of our minister, Mr. Tasker. They will speak for themselves. But I will speak of something far more important than talents or eloquence or pulpit attractions. I will speak of the assiduity of his household ministrations. It is to the aggressive principle, which he puts incessantly into operation, and to the activity of his secondary agents that I ascribe the chief success of our undertaking. And I confess, it is most cheering to find that the success of our cause depends upon nothing so rare as genius or talent or transcendent abilities, but upon the assiduities of Christian worth and Christian principle. Give me, within a stone throw of the Westport, the most eloquent preacher in the world, and give me another within the Westport who has no pretensions to oratory or eloquence, but who plies the families with the assiduities of Christian kindness, and I say that the eloquent preacher will not attract 1/10 part of those which will be gathered around the other by dint of his plain household ministrations. Upon this, then, I found my anticipations of the success of my plan. Talents are rare, and I should give up the cause of the world's regeneration if I thought it hinged upon men's high talents. Grace is diffusible. Christian worth may be brought down by prayer from heaven upon all. These ingredients are capable of being indefinitely multiplied, and it is by virtue of that Christianity will be diffused throughout the mass of the population. But look at the present system in Edinburgh. We want a minister to fill the church, and for this purpose we get the ablest and most eloquent man we can find in Scotland, and when he comes he does fill the church by his oratory, but from whence does he fill it? From previous congregations. There is no creation of new worshippers. There is a mere transference of old worshippers from other places. This is the whole amount of the mere congregational system, with a fine, eloquent, and attractive minister. Whereas we get a man on the territorial principle, whose business is to fill the church out of the district, to expatiate among the people through the week, to be a constant attendant of every sick bed, to pray at every dying couch, to dignify every funeral by his presence, and to ingratiate himself with all the neighborhood by his interest in their welfare, and by his attention to the religious and moral education of the young, and this is the right way to get new churches filled altogether by new hearers. It grieves me to hear of jealousies about raising churches here and there. There might be jealousies if we meant to fill churches at the expense of previously existing congregations, but we do not want that. Our system is such that it creates new customers. We make inroads merely on the outfield population, which is increasing by thousands every year, in spite of all the crowding and bustle we see on the streets on Sunday when the bells are ringing for the church. Here is a short statement of facts connected with the formation and progress of the Westport Local Society. Quote, "The society was formed immediately after the addresses which were delivered in George Street last summer. Its first meeting was held on the 27th of July, 1844, and since then it meets every Saturday evening. The Westport is divided into 20 districts of about 20 families each. The visitors in these districts constitute the society. The first business of importance was to set up a school. This was done on November 11th last, 1844. There was an attendance of 64 the first week. Now it has increased to about 250. Beside the male teachers who give instructions in geography, arithmetic, and all of the ordinary branches of education, there is a female teacher whose duty it is to instruct the girls in sewing and knitting, to which is added, in the case of the more advanced scholars, washing and dressing of clothes. Habits of cleanliness and economy are strictly enforced. And to secure these important objects, there are baths provided in which to wash the children, and a juvenile savings fund has been established, the details of which will afterwards be given. An evening school has also been opened. During the winter months, it was attended by nearly 150 scholars, a large proportion of whom, when they entered, were verging towards manhood and womanhood, ignorant of the very elements of reading and writing. The good of which the evening school has been the instrument is incalculable. There is a committee of ladies which meets monthly, whose main concern is to visit absentees and remonstrate with the parents regarding the duty of educating their children. It is of consequence to notice that the rule of exacting fees is enforced as rigorously as circumstances admit, that a large proportion are punctual in their payments, and that instances have occurred of persons who have made considerable sacrifices in order to furnish the necessary charge. The fee for attendance on the day school is 2 pence, on the evening school 1.5 pence. There has been all along a service 3 times every Sabbath, to attend which the families are urged by their respective visitors. In April last, the Reverend Mr. Tasker commenced active missionary labors in the district. The number who come out on the Sabbath is always increasing. In the forenoon, the attendance is about 80. In the afternoon, nearly double that number. And in the evening, the present place of meeting has, within these few Sabbaths past, been comfortably filled. A few cases of awakening, and so far as man can judge, of conversion, have already occurred. One family, after due investigation, had the ordinance of baptism administered to their infant. And there are others applying for that privilege where a short delay or period of probation has been considered expedient. Weekly prayer meetings are held in all, or most of all, of the districts, and there are one or two more strictly congregational meetings which are numerously and eagerly attended. Amid innumerable difficulties and discouragements, the nucleus of a Christian congregation is beginning to appear. A striking confirmation has been given of the strength of their principles by more than one of the congregation, in that they have resisted and resolved to quit favorable occupations which are either of a doubtful nature or implied their attendance on some portion of the Lord's Day. In May last, a savings fund was opened for deposits of 1 pence and upwards. By an arrangement with the National Security Savings Bank of Edinburgh, accounts are opened there for individual subscribers of 1 shilling and upward, whose deposits are transferred thither through the medium of our savings fund. Collectors are appointed to call on the families and receive their weekly contributions where they may find it inconvenient, or may be unwilling to lodge it in the fund themselves. But a small number of collectors have been found to undertake the work, and no proper report can be given of the result throughout the whole of the districts in the Westport, many of which have not been visited at all. End quote. I am quite sure that if the aggressive principle could be applied to local savings banks, the most beneficial results would flow from it. The very wholesome habit of accumulation would be increased, and it might be increased tenfold at least. I understand, as far as man can judge, that there have been 10 conversions. Several of these have grown up and were never admitted to any sacrament. After being subjected to a searching examination, they were judged to be worthy. People may say that 10 is a very small number. Now, I would meet this by the enlightened remark of Mr. Wilberforce, who said that such was the power of Christianity that for every one that it spiritualized and Christianized, it moralized 50. Christianity has an elevating effect on the general morality of a neighborhood. And while I say that the saving of the immortal soul is infinitely of more importance then all other considerations of the effect they may shed on this transitory scene, yet, when speaking to secular patriots and philanthropists, who have no great value for the spiritual element, I would wish them to understand that for every man that is converted, there is a sort of guarantee that perhaps 50 others will be elevated somewhat in the morality of their habits. Now, this is not sufficiently adverted to by these secular men. Our Savior says, "Ye are the salt of the earth." Now, I would call upon them to remark that as there is a small proportion in point of bulk between the salt and the thing salted, so spiritual men may bear a small proportion to the society in which they are placed, and yet the whole of that society may be indebted to them for its very continuance, just as the thing salted is prevented from falling into dissolution by the small quantity of salt. Christians, in the same way, are the salt of the society in which they are placed, by exercising a purifying and preserving influence. And yet I am convinced that secular politicians and philosophers know not how much they are indebted to Christians for the highest civil blessings they enjoy. I wish that statesmen and philosophers, who attach no great value to the spiritual element, would at least view it in this light, although I am not so confident or sanguine of their being impressed by it as I once was. It is to the influence of Christians that we are indebted for making the population far more manageable, more civilized, and more orderly than they would ever be if they were deprived of these Christians. And let this world be deprived of an evangelical and practical Christianity, the whole of society, in the course of a few months, would hasten to dissolution. I find, however, that statesmen and mere secular philanthropists are exceedingly inaccessible to this argument. And the inference I draw from this circumstance is that Christianity seems to be that sort of thing that it refuses to be indebted for the success of its advancement to any other argument than the mere primary one upon which it rests its claims, the salvation of immortal souls. We must go on preaching spiritual views of Christianity and doing all the good we can, although we get little credit for it, because these statesmen and secular philanthropists, as if struck by judicial blindness, see it not. And it seems as if, because they refuse to entertain the primary and essential recommendation of Christianity, they have been struck with a judicial blindness, in virtue of which they cannot perceive the secondary recommendations which follow in the train of a warm evangelical Christianity in the land. To expect to be able to see the secondary recommendations first appears to be an inversion of the scriptural order, which says, "Seek ye first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and all these things will be added unto you." Let us therefore keep hold of the spiritual element and be urging on the great cause of spiritual Christianity amongst us, and other things will come along with it. Insofar as the water of Leith is concerned, I never heard of 10 conversions. There may have been many more, for God has his hidden ones, but I don't know of them. And yet, what did Mr. Tate, the commissioner, depone to the government commission on the religious instruction of the people? He says that the water of Leith was at one time the most disorderly and gave more difficulty to the police than any other place, and yet we find him saying that it has now become the most quiet and orderly within the whole sphere of the police regulations. And when asked what he thought this was owing to, he said that he ascribed it to the assiduities of the missionary. Now, although I am not aware of 10 conversions throughout that district, the operations of the missionary had had the effect of so elevating the standard of morality among the general population as to have produced such a marked change as is borne testimony to by Mr. Tate. There is one testimony which I consider to be invaluable. This is furnished by Mr. Tasker, in the state of one of his own districts. That is, that we got the assistance of one agent whom we didn't know of when we began our work in the district. In the progress of our work, the agent cast up, and this is one great beauty of the territorial system. This agent lives very near the Westport, close to the place where we intend to erect our church, and he is associated with one of the poorest and most wretched districts in the Westport. And here is his report, as a specimen of what he has done. He has to maintain himself and his family by his own industry, and it is his spare hours he employs in attending to the district assigned to him. The following is the report. Quote, "In one district, in every respect a fair type of the Westport, but which has been thoroughly wrought on the territorial principle during the application of Dr. Chalmers' scheme, the result is as follows. Total number of families, 27. Total number of children under 15 years, 36. Total number of adults from 15 to 20, 10. Of these capable of attending school, 27. Attending Westport School, 15. Attending other schools, 8. Leaving only out of 27 capable of school attendance without the means of education, 4. Church attendance. Of these 27 families, the visitor found 3 Roman Catholic families and 2 families besides connected with Christian churches, leaving 22 families living in practical heathenism. 7 of these families now are attendants at the Westport Church, comprehending 32 individuals. Considering the same proportion applied to the estimated number of inhabitants in the Westport, which is 2,000, we would have in the same result a congregation of 730 persons. A still more gladdening result in said district is that of these 32 individuals, there are a number who give evidence that they have been born again, and are now, upon the strength of that conviction, in communion with the visible church and living epistles of Christ, giving light in the darkness. Besides these 7 families, there are 6 or 7 occasional hearers, giving good reason to hope that they will by and by become regular attendants. Thus, one half of the moral desert here has been made to blossom. Fruit, we trust, well-pleasing to God is brought forth, and reasoning from analogy, the remaining half will not be so difficult, seeing that coadjutors in such a goodly proportion are now raised up in the midst of themselves. Savings Bank. These families contribute weekly and deposit in the savings bank at an average of 7 shillings, being upwards of £18 per annum. Were the whole Westport to deposit at the same rate, the annual sum saved would amount to about £340. The attendance of the children at the schools needs no remarks. The statement speaks for itself. In conclusion, 8 individuals were admitted to the Lord's table at last communion on a credible profession of their faith, most of whom were living a few months before without even the form of godliness. A number more are catechumens who are giving pleasing evidence of the work of the Spirit on their souls, though not so decided as yet as to warrant admission. Pleasing evidences and illustrations of self-denial and the influence of an awakened conscience might be given, but it is deemed inexpedient for obvious reasons. William Tasker, November 6, 1845. End quote. Let me speak now as to the countenance we have received. I am now at liberty to mention a very noble benefaction which I received about a year ago. Inquiry was made at me by a lady, mentioning that she had a sum at her disposal, and that she wished to apply it to charitable purposes. and she wanted me to enumerate a list of charitable objects in proportion to the estimate I had of their value. Accordingly, I furnished her with a scale of about 5 or 6 charitable objects. The highest in the scale was those institutions which had for their design the Christianizing of the people at home, and also mentioned to her, in connection with the Christianizing at home, what we were doing in the Westport. And there came to me from her, in the course of a day or two, no less a sum than £300. She is now dead, she is now in her grave, and her works do follow her. When she gave me this noble benefaction, she laid me under strict injunctions of secrecy, and accordingly I did not mention her name to any person. But after she was dead, I begged of her nearest heir that I might be allowed to proclaim it, because I thought that her example, so worthy to be followed, might influence others in imitating her. And I am happy to say that I am now at liberty to mention that it was Lady Nairn of Perthshire. It enabled us, at the expense of £330, to purchase a site for schools and a church. And we got a site in the very heart of the locality, with a very considerable extent of ground for a washing green, a washing house, and a playground for the children, so that we are a great step in advance towards the completion of our parochial economy. I am also very happy to say that I am authorized to mention the name of another lady, whose countenance is given to the territorial system in general, and to another locality in Edinburgh, to be worked out in the same way as the Westport. The lady I refer to would never allow me, till now, to divulge her name. But in this case, I really begged of her to authorize me to mention her name and represented to her that her example might induce others to come forward. I may state what led her to associate herself with the assuming of another locality and to advance the funds for its cultivation. It arose from this. In the month of March last, I gave public addresses to a number of my old and wealthy acquaintances in Glasgow, merchant princes, men of capital and great means there. And I said that I thought that if anyone would assume a district of 2,000, I would allow 5 years for preparation, for moral preparation, in the way of schooling and missionary labor, and that after that I thought the people would be prepared for a complete parochial economy. And I said that the expense of this would be £100 a year for 5 years. I will not say whether the hint was taken or not by those present. If it was, there was nothing that came my way. Be that, however, as it may, the address was reported in the newspapers. It was read by the lady I am referring to, and she resolved to furnish the £100 a year, or whatever was necessary. And this she undertook to do. It did not come my way either. People seem to have some sort of idea that my means are inexhaustible, which, I can assure them, is a very great mistake. But it was better as it was, for, she says, look out for another locality and let everything go on in the way it is doing in the Westport. The lady's name, who has made this offer, is the Dowager Countess of Effingham, a Scotch lady, and sister to the present Earl of Rosebery. Dr. Chalmers here read the letter from the Dowager Lady Effingham, from whence it appeared that her district was to be in the Lawn Market. Lady Effingham, however, determined that Edinburgh should enjoy a double benefit, and she attached to her offer this condition, that she would come forward only on condition that she could get some minister to enter upon another district. The Reverend Mr. Guthrie came forward and is in communication with Lady Effingham, and he is in a condition to form another district. Dr. Chalmers here referred to the local operation of the Reverend Mr. Charles Brown's congregation in the Lawn Market and a part of the Cowgate, and also said that on the north side of the Lawn Market his friend, the Reverend Mr. Tweedy, was engaged, and that he was anxious to get his church transferred to that part of the town. The Reverend Doctor next adverted to the district of the Reverend Mr. Stirrut of the West Church, and said here was a very tolerable province of at least 6 districts. In addition to this, his friend, the Reverend Mr. Robertson of the Vennel, he hoped, would entertain the idea of taking off the south side of the Grassmarket, so that they would thus have a chain of forts all the way from the south bridge to the main point. Some people say, "Oh, this is all a scheme of the Free Church." Now, I say this is a mistake. Who cares about the Free Church compared with the Christian good of the people of Scotland? Who cares for any church but as an instrument of Christian good? For be assured that the moral and religious well-being of the population is infinitely of higher importance than the advancement of any sect. For myself, I should rejoice if the ministers of every evangelical denomination would go and do likewise. There would be a far greater likelihood of our coming to a closer union if we were engaged together in such missionary work than by meeting in committees and drawing up articles which give rise to interminable controversies. Here the Reverend Doctor referred to the union which prevailed among various bodies of evangelical Christians with regard to the conversion of the heathen abroad, and said he should like to see the same spirit of union with reference to Christianizing the heathen at home. I may observe that within these 2 hours I have got notice of another lady assuming a district, in addition to Lady Effingham, and I have much pleasure in proclaiming, in the hearing of all now assembled, the venerable name of the Duchess of Gordon, who has assumed a district beginning at Holyrood and coming gradually up the Canongate. Nothing delights me more than to assure the people of the humbler classes of the great disposition which exists among the upper classes to do them good, if they only knew how. I confess I do not give them much credit for skill or intelligence in setting about it. They are, I think, great blunderers. But, so far as the disposition is concerned, they have a great disposition to do all they can for the working classes. I never fail to mention this. There is often great odium and contempt in the vocation of a go-between, but I glory in being a go-between from the higher to the lower classes, carrying messages of substantial kindness from the one and bringing back expressions of gratitude from the other. Such a go-between, acting the part of a peacemaker between the extremes of society, who now stand so widely and distrustfully apart from each other, discharges the best and the highest among the offices of pure philanthropy and enlightened patriotism. As there may perhaps be some 100 pounders present, I would say, for 100 pounds a year, I would undertake to advance any 2,000 of the population in Edinburgh. When I say 100 pounds a year, I mention a sum which is rather short of my mark, but I would expect that another 50 pounds would be supplied by local means. 70 pounds would be required for the missionary, 30 pounds for the male teacher, and 20 pounds for the female teacher. This would amount to 120 pounds, and the rest of the 150 pounds would be required for rent, washing, soap, and sundry other expenses. If any gentleman, then, has 500 pounds to spare, and would give it in 5 instalments, he might accomplish an incalculable amount of permanent good in the city of Edinburgh. The Reverend Doctor then proceeded to express a hope that he would receive the cooperation of the civil authorities in this work by the reduction of the number of licensed public houses in the district, which were a prodigious incubus on their exertions. He referred in complimentary terms to the speech of Bailey Duncan in the town council on this subject, and said he was glad to find that the Friends of Temperance had printed that speech as one of their tracts. He, Dr. Chalmers, was aware that there were great obstacles to the reduction of the number of licenses, such as the higher rents which landlords received from their property when it was occupied as public houses, the interests of the publicans themselves, the interests even of government from the proceeds of the malt tax and the spirit duties. But he thought that with reference to the latter obstacle, the higher classes would show themselves destitute of patriotism if they objected even to the imposition of an additional income tax, unpopular as it was, rather than allow the revenue to be drawn from sources which so obviously sapped the comfort and morality of the common people. It was quite disgraceful as it was. What did the meeting think of 53 public houses in the Cowgate? Think of the immense keen scrambling competition that there must be among the keepers of these houses, and what a formidable agency was at work for corrupting the morality of the people. He understood that the magistrates of Perth were going sweepingly to work in restricting the number of licenses to what they judged sufficient for each locality, and he hoped their example would speedily be followed in other towns. He would be thankful if the magistrates could not go the length of cutting off licenses from those who had them already, if they would even refuse to grant new licenses till the number was sufficiently reduced by removal or death. If the 53 public houses in the Cowgate, for instance, were reduced to 10 or 6, it would tell on the habits and external appearance of the locality in a single week. He had much pleasure in mentioning that Bailey Duncan had been acting on the principle of locality in respect to licensing and had begun with the lawn market. The following was a communication from Captain Haining, the superintendent of police, with reference to its results. Quote, Police Office, Edinburgh, 19th of December, 1845. Sir, I beg to inform you that since the conversation I had with you a few days ago, in reference to the state of crime in Lawn Market and Castle Hill, I have made particular inquiry of the sergeants who have been in charge of that district during the last few years, and to report that crime in that neighborhood is greatly diminished. The number of offenses in that locality within the last 12 months being much fewer than in previous years. They also state that this improvement is particularly observable on Sundays. I am quite satisfied that this gratifying change is to be chiefly attributed to the fact that a number of the low tippling houses in that neighborhood have been deprived of license, and it will be invariably found that the worst localities are those in which such houses are most numerous, and in my opinion, we can scarcely hope to effect any permanent good in those districts until the keepers of the lowest class of public houses are compelled to shut up their premises. I remain, sir, your most obedient servant, W. Haining, Superintendent of Police, William Duncan, Esquire, 1 Harriet Row, Edinburgh, end quote. The Reverend Doctor then proceeded to say that he wished the Sanitary Society lately established in this city as an auxiliary to the one in London would direct their attention to the Westport, which they would find a fit subject for their operations. There were certain nuisances in the road leading out of the Westport towards the West Church, which impregnated the air with most injurious exhalations, and which he wished to see removed. He would much rather that compensation was given than be without redress. There was also another point requiring their attention. From the houses on the south side of the Westport being built against a mound of earth, many of them were in a state of great unwholesomeness from damp coming in through the back wall. He wished that the Sanitary Committee would take cognizance of these houses. He knew not if they were aware of an invention which had been lately made by Mr. Marshall, of a species of plaster which was impervious to damp, and which could be procured at a cheaper rate than ordinary lath and plaster. The following was the testimony which was borne to its merits by the Western Bank of Greenock. Quote, Western Bank of Scotland's Office, Greenock, December 27th, 1845. I have great pleasure in bearing testimony to the effect of the patent Intianuco in curing damp in the walls of the inner offices of this bank. These walls are very old, without lath, and were so very damp that the paper with which they had been covered was in several places completely destroyed. The Intianuco has made a perfect cure of the damp, and from its fine polish has saved all after expense of painting and papering. It is now 18 months since it was done. The expense was 8.5 pence per square yard. It was perfectly dry in 3 days. In fact, I was only 2 whole days deprived of the use of the apartment. Signed, James Miller, Agent, end quote. The Reverend Doctor, in continuation, said he would like the experiment tried on some of the houses in the Westport. It served not merely to defend the walls from damp, but was also admirably adapted for flooring and preventing anything like damp from the ground. It was also impervious to rats. He added that it could be procured from Messrs. Ramage & Sons, plasterers, Jamaica Street. He could not close his address without referring to a remarkable testimony in favor of the local territorial system, although it involved some delicacy, as his own name was mentioned in it, but he referred to it merely for the sake of the testimony which it bore to the principle which it recommended. It occurred in the report of Mr. Gibson, formerly the Inspector of Schools in Scotland under government, but who resigned that situation and is now at the head of the Educational Department of the Free Church. The report was dated February 1845 and was printed in the minutes of Committee of Council on Education. He referred to this report for the sake of the testimony of a gentleman so thoroughly practical, and that not merely for a vindication of what he wrote about a quarter of a century ago, but also as a recommendation of his system. Quote, "I was induced," says Mr. Gibson, "by such considerations as these, to spend much of my time when in Glasgow in the examination of the educational means and of the schools particularly provided for the benefit of the very lowest of its population. I was most anxious to ascertain to what extent the peculiarly enlightened and philosophical views long since expounded by Dr. Chalmers, and to some extent exemplified in operation by him in some of the poorest districts of the city, had been acted upon, and to test their soundness and practical wisdom by an examination of the results of actual experiments. To the description of some of these experiments I shall devote a few pages of this report, and from the narrative I hope it will appear that by a sufficient multiplication of similar efforts, the social, as well as the moral and religious condition of these classes of the community might, even in the course of a single generation, be greatly elevated and improved. Perhaps the fullest and most satisfactory illustration of the practicability of this may be found in a detailed narrative of the efforts made by a few earnest and philanthropic individuals in the suburban and manufacturing districts of Woodside. Before the commencement of their labors, a few years ago, there were, in the immediate neighborhood, and among a population consisting almost wholly of poor operatives and their families, no means either of secular or religious instruction. The parents were living in the deepest moral debasement, and their children were growing up in ignorance of every social and religious duty. To prevent the perpetuation of this state of matters, several gentlemen residing in the neighborhood, or having an interest in the district, began with earnestness and Christian zeal the task of providing educational means suited to the whole population. Weekday and Sabbath schools were established for the children, and all the processes of a home mission were simultaneously brought to bear upon the parents. Acting on the principle so earnestly and eloquently expounded by Dr. Chalmers, and denominated by him the influence of locality in large towns, each member of the association undertook to visit, regularly and at stated intervals, so many of the families resident in the district, and to endeavor, by friendly intercourse with the parents, and affectionate interest in the education and general welfare of the children, to bring all under his personal and moral influence. A missionary, too, was appointed to labor constantly among them, to carry to each household the lessons of Christianity, and at stated times to assemble in the schoolroom and address in formal discourse all who had come under their humanizing power. The contrast between the present condition of this district and its state only a few years ago is very striking. There then existed, as I have said before, no valuable means of instruction, either secular or religious. Very many of the adult population had never enjoyed the opportunity of acquiring even the ordinary branches of reading and writing. They were living in the habitual neglect of religious ordinances, and of religious truth they were in general profoundly ignorant. Their disregard for the former was so complete that, 4 years ago, only 7 persons could be brought to attend a meeting held for the celebration of divine worship. And their aversion to the lessons of Christianity was so rooted and so deep that in the course of 16 months, 4 missionaries abandoned in despair the task of reclaiming them from their sordid tastes and the depraved habits by which they were characterized. The members of the association, however, hopeful and undiscouraged, persevered, and now these ordinances are regarded by numbers with becoming reverence and waited upon with all diligence. These lessons are listened to with attentive gladness and are productive of their own peaceable fruits. These are a few examples of the efforts made to reclaim, to the decencies and proprieties of life, an outcast and debased, because a hitherto totally neglected, population. And it is after a very careful examination of the efficiency of the arrangements made and the soundness of the principles acted on that I adopt the opinion, long since expressed, that while the profligacy which obtains in every crowded and concentrated mass of human beings is looked upon by many a philanthropist as one of those hopeless and irreclaimable distempers of the body politic for which there is no remedy, there are certain practicable arrangements which, under the blessing of God, will stay the growing calamity, and would, by the perseverance of a few years, land us in a purer and a better generation. A full development of the precise character and tendency of the arrangements will be found in Volume 16 of Dr. Chalmers' works. The singularly powerful and beneficial effects of acting on the principle of locality in our endeavors to bring the masses of the population who are deeply depraved within the reach of moral and religious influences, and to secure a sound and in all respects a suitable education for their children, are there sketched with peculiar exactness, felicity, and wisdom. And from the success of the experiments there detailed, and of those which have come under my observation, there cannot, I think, be a doubt that similar arrangements, if applied in sufficiently numerous cases, would in a few years achieve the amelioration, if not the entire regeneration, of the whole population. End quote. It is not many weeks since I fell in with this report of Mr. Gibson's, and you may well believe the effect it had upon me, after the interval of a quarter of a century, for the work to which he refers was written as far back as 1819. Since that time I have made several attempts to verify by experiment and set forth an actual example and exhibition the soundness of my long-cherished and deeply seated conviction, a conviction which many years of trial and observation have had only the effect of strengthening the more, respecting the likeliest method under God of recovering our population, both in large towns and recent manufacturing villages, and generally in overgrown parishes, from the degeneracy into which they have fallen. I have never been in full and fair circumstances for such an undertaking till now. My attempts in Glasgow, more than 20 years ago, were baffled by the inroads of my general on the parochial congregation, which I was most anxious to form. My endeavors to raise a territorial church belonging to the establishment in the Cowgate of Edinburgh, some 12 years ago, were overruled by the authorities, who would not surrender the high seat rents of the wealthier classes for the large and cheap accommodation which I endeavored to negotiate in behalf of the families of that destitute locality. The nearest approach to the realization of my views was made about 9 or 10 years ago, in the Water of Leith, when, in the brief space of 2 12-months, the number of churchgoers was tripled, being increased from 1 in 9 to 1 in 3 of the whole population. But this, too, was overset by the ruin of the church extension scheme, an event which took place prior to our disruption, and for which that disruption is not responsible, all along discouraged, in fact, by one administration. And though countenanced by another when they were out of power, in power they threw it overboard. Meanwhile, I never lost my confidence in its efficacy, though I must confess that my representations and arguments have been of little avail in carrying the conviction to other minds than my own. As, for example, at the British Association in Glasgow, where neither my statements nor proofs, even though cast in the mold of their own dry and often meaningless statistics, could save it, I fear, from being regarded by the collective wisdom of that scientific body, with Mr. Quetelet from Flanders at their head, as but a vision of fairyland, a mere fancy picture of gilded utopianism. The reception of my views on the territorial system, then, was as like as possible to the reception of my views since on the sustentation fund by the ministers now of the Free Church, when, met together in full convocation, they listened with perfect indulgence and great good nature, but with universal incredulity. When the thing was argued, it was looked to as a dream of enthusiasm. When the thing was tried, it proved strong enough and solid enough for the support of a denomination of at least 650 churches strong. And as confidently do I predict now as I predicted then, that if the system be conducted aright, it will be found commensurate in efficiency and power to the supply of all that is deficient, whether in an education or in a religious ministry for Scotland. At all events, what I have now stated will explain, if it do not justify, the perseverance of the efforts I am now making for a universal provision, both of schools and churches, to the common people of our land. True, it is but for one locality, for the families of Westport, that I now appear in person and solicit the liberalities of the Christian public. But, over and above, I would again implore the aid of the authorities for the removal of all those moral, and the aid of the Sanitary Board for the removal of all those physical nuisances and discomforts which are found to exist within the limits of a territory so full of misery and vice at present, yet so full of promise for the future. Could I gain this help from our men in power and this cooperation from the Board of Health, then, with the virtue which lies in education, and above all the hallowing influences of the gospel of Jesus Christ, I should look, though in humble dependence on the indispensable grace from on high, for such a result as, at least in its first beginnings, I could interpret into the streaks and dawnings of a better day. When, after the struggles and discomfitures of 30 years, I might depart in peace and leave the further prosecution of our enterprise with comfort and calmness in the hands of another generation. Dr. Chalmers omitted to mention that the Westport congregation collected £1.12 for the home mission and £2.05.11¾ for the Jews as the produce of their Sunday offerings for these respective schemes. There was some silver, of which a goodly proportion was contributed by themselves, but both collections and their main amount consisted of a mound of penny and halfpenny pieces with not a few farthings. Dr. Chalmers has further to state that Mr. William Boak, tanner and courier, has had the goodness to remit the sum of £8, which is the annual rent of the place in which the church and schools now meet, another most gratifying specimen of the interest felt in our proceedings by those connected with the Westport. Appeal to the Edinburgh public on behalf of the inhabitants of the Westport for a church and schools. A 12-month has now been completed since the locality of the Westport has been entered on, with a view of reclaiming its families to the habit of attendance at public worship on the Sabbath and on schools through the week. A goodly and increasing congregation is now in process of being formed, and no less than 300 day and evening scholars are receiving at the hands of our teachers a wholesome education. The attendance is chiefly local, and very many who avail themselves of the facilities now brought to their doors and placed within the reach of all are among the poorest of the poor. Encouraged by this success and by our confident prospects for the future, we think that the time has fully come when we might state our necessities and our claims for an enlarged accommodation. Our operations have been hitherto carried on in the storehouse of an old tannery, situated in the bottom of a close, having an obscure access, so fitted to repel rather than to invite, as we are quite sure must have kept back many who would otherwise have joined our Sabbath services. It is true that in the face of these disadvantages, a large nucleus of a congregation has been formed, made up of worshippers who are steady and regular in their attendance and receiving a gradual augmentation of new ones who are weekly dropping in. But we feel that every obstacle in the way of a movement so promising should, as much as possible, be either lessened or done away. And besides, we hold that the growing disposition and demand of the residenters in the Westport, both for the ministrations of the gospel and for the sound education of their children, entitles them to a more seemly provision for their wants than with our present resources we can possibly bestow upon them. It is a good and hopeful symptom when the people at large begin to seek after these things and to feel the value which the families in the Westport now feel, both for the teaching of ordinary scholarship and for that higher teaching which makes wise unto salvation. It is surely the part of the upper and middle classes to meet even more than halfway such rising aspirations on the part of the humbler classes in society. And now that the appetency for what is good has been so far awakened, it remains that the wealthy should, on the ground both of an enlightened policy and of high Christian patriotism, provide the means for its permanent gratification. This, of all others, is the meeting place on which the rich and the poor might come into most beneficial contact and cooperation. And when the one party are manifesting such an honorable desire, both for the education of letters and the education of principle, we cannot doubt but that the other party will hail the generous impulse and do what in them lies to foster and to extend it. In these circumstances, it has been proposed to erect a church and a school for the special benefit of the inhabitants in this district. It has been long our cherished conviction, confirmed by the partial success of similar, though incomplete, experiments, and, we may add, by the decided failure of every other, that there is no other method of reaching and pervading the masses of a crowded population than breaking it up into small, manageable districts and bringing all the influences of a full parochial economy to bear upon each of them. Let the trial be only made and persevered in, and it will be found, so indestructible is the identity of human nature in all conditions, that the heretofore neglected families, in the lanes and the alleys of our largest towns, are in every way as accessible to the impressions both of Christian and common kindness, as are the cottage families of our most peaceful and retired parishes. With the advantages which, under God, we at present possess of most efficient teachers, as well as of a most able and devoted missionary, we never were in a likelier state for verifying all our anticipations of the power which lies in the local system for recovering even the most wretched and depraved commonalty from the degeneracy into which they have fallen. We deeply feel that without the indispensable blessing from above, a most signal and impressive mockery awaits our enterprise, and that all the confidence of vain boasting will be utterly put to shame. But in the administration of divine grace, that high and heavenly blessing, which should ever be the object of all our desires and all our dependence, is a blessing upon means. And it is for the setting up of these means that we now solicit the aid of Christian friends, and would cast ourselves on the liberality of a religious and benevolent public. If we succeed, our success will not stand alone, but lead to a universal result applicable to all similar localities, and will be the object, therefore, of many successive imitations, once that the efficacy of our peculiar method has been brought to the test of a conclusive and experimental demonstration. Thomas Chalmers, December 29th, 1845. Nota bene. Whatever surplus remains after deducting the expense of the church and schools will go towards the erection of a manse and schoolmaster's dwelling house. This audio recording was read by Michael Ives. I hope you found it enlightening and edifying. Visit westportexperiment.com for more audio resources and where I write about parish missions, the care of souls, and all things Reformed.